Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the announcement today by Rick Santorum that he is suspending his campaign and discuss the reasons why with Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer with the Philadelphia Daily News. He has followed the career of the former Pennsylvania senator who was soundly rejected by the state's voters in 2006 and was likely facing a similar fate in the Republican primary 2 weeks away. Then we will speak with George Gale, the executive director of National People's Network. He is helping lead the 99% Spring and 99% Power, training 100,000 activists in April and organizing demonstrations at upcoming shareholder meetings of some of the biggest, most abusive, and least accountable corporations in America. Then finally, as Tax Day looms, we will examine how your taxes are spent by the federal government and how the spending is prioritized. Mattia Kramer, a senior research analyst at the National Priorities Project, joins us. They just released the report, Tax Day 2012, that gives the numbers down to the penny on how your federal income taxes were spent in fiscal 2011. Joining us now is Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and a senior fellow with Media Matters for America. He blogs at attitude.com, that's attitytyTOOD.com, and is the author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy, and his latest book is The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. Welcome to Background Briefing, Will Bunch.
Hey, Ian, thanks so much for having me back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you too, Will. And your state senator who was, he was finished, right, put a fork in him in 2006, soundly rejected by Pennsylvania's voters, and yet he managed to come back. And for a while there, he looked like he could even become the Republican nominee for president of the United States.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating that, you know, Pennsylvania was the state that obviously put an end to Santorum 1.0, and now it looks like we've put an end to Santorum 2.0, because I think really, you know, there were a number of factors, obviously, that went into his decision that he announced today, but I think the biggest one was he really felt, and I think rightfully so, that, the embarrassment of losing Pennsylvania yet again, you know, his supposed home state, although he's actually lived in Virginia for a number of years. But, you know, that just would have been too much. I mean, he's looking ahead to his future. I mean, I think he very much would like to run in 2016 if Romney loses the election in the fall. And I think, you know, the fact that he's been so soundly rejected by the voters who know him best here in Pennsylvania would be quite a cross for him to bear if he tried to do that. He did, probably the smart thing politically and got out.
So the polls were pretty clear, weren't they, that he was going to lose? And then Romney had barely begun to spend the $2 million that he'd budgeted for the state of Pennsylvania.
Right. Well, the polls showed was just incredible momentum towards Romney in that back before people were paying attention a couple months ago, you know, Santorum did have the huge edge in name recognition here, and he did have a big lead in the polls, the first couple polls that were done in Pennsylvania. But then as the primary got closer, the latest round of polls showed the race was basically a dead heat, you know, that maybe Santorum had a statistically insignificant lead. And as you said, I mean, this was all before Santorum was ready to spend $2 or $3 million blitzing the state on ads. And in fact, those ads started running yesterday. I mean, they supposedly were going to pull them because of the illness of Santorum's daughter, but because you can't just quickly pull ads from the TV schedule, I guess, they actually were running all day yesterday, and I think you know, Santorum didn't have any money to match that, and I think the negative ad blitz would have just destroyed Santorum and the state, and it would have been you know, if he'd lost Pennsylvania by 5, 10, 15 points, it just would have been quite an embarrassment for him.
So what is the status of his three-year-old daughter, Isabella? She has a rare genetic disorder and apparently has lived well beyond her life expectancy.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It does have a very short life expectancy, unfortunately, and trisomy 18, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a chromosomal disorder, and she's been in the hospital a couple times this year. I think she was in the hospital over the weekend, I believe, with pneumonia. But she has been released, and I mean, so far, you know, the most recent news is positive in that she's out of the hospital, and that's, I think we all certainly can agree, that's very good news, and we're all happy to hear that. And that's something that obviously weighed on his decision too. I mean, it just when you look at all the factors, it just seemed like this was the time for Santorum to get out. It was kind of a no brainer. You know, he had this situation with his daughter, and would have lost Pennsylvania and damaged his reputation. And now he basically lives to fight another day, as the cliche goes. You know, that he, I think he sees himself. I think he sees three very positive things coming out of this. And I would agree with Santorum that I see these positive things coming out of this too, which are, number one, you know, he's, for better or worse, established himself as kind of the leader of the conservative movement in this country right now, or certainly the face of the conservative movement more than any of the other people who, you know, dropped out of the race a long time ago. So that's number one. I mean, number two, I mean, he's, I think, set the stage for a campaign in 2016, and we all know that the Republicans have a history of giving the nomination to the candidate who came in second the time before, and I think he's looking at that. And the other thing many pointed out is that, I mean, he was already doing pretty well financially as a consultant and a pundit and a lobbyist, a rainmaker before, but I'm sure his income value has increased because of his higher name recognition. So he'll certainly probably do very well financially next year or so. You know, I think everything out of this campaign, if you're Rick Santorum and you're looking at this campaign, I think you'd have to look at everything that came out of it as pretty much a positive for him, even though he didn't get the nomination. I mean, that was always going to be a long shot without having the money you really need to get a nomination in this day and age, and without having the really any support from party insiders at all. So I think he really did the best he possibly could have, to be honest.
Again, I'm speaking with Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He's also a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. And we're talking about Rick Santorum pulling out of the race today in a speech he gave in Gettysburg. He said we're not done fighting. And he also apparently after the speech, by the way, Will, in the speech, I don't think there was any mention of Romney. At all.
Well, no, he certainly has not endorsed Mitt Romney. You know, I would imagine that might come at some point if he wants to guarantee that he gets a primetime speaking spot at the convention in Tampa, which I'm sure that he does. No, I mean, you know, I think that's not surprising given, you know, just given the millions and millions of dollars that Romney spent on attack ads in Santorum. I mean, there's a lot of short-term hard feelings there, and I'm sure at some point, you know, with his future in mind, I'm sure Santorum will probably endorse him at some point, but clearly today wasn't the day he was going to do that.
So, Will Bunch, what explained his fighting words? And, you know, they were not done fighting, and against all odds, we won 11 states, millions of voters, millions of votes, and then after that, of course, in Gettysburg, after his speech, he joined up with Focus in the Family's James Dobson, who's the sort of de facto head of the religious right.
Well, right. Well, I mean, the kind of two interrelated things are behind those words, I think. One is that, you know, he truly sees himself as the leader of a movement. I mean, he feels that he's leading a crusade, you know, for family values, like you said, and to restore a more socially conservative outlook in this country. I think he also believes that, you know, he would be the protector of the Middle East against, you know, Islamic extremism and a nuclear Iran and all that. And I think he does, you know, in his own mind, he takes these issues very seriously. And then the other thing is, I think he, you know, he's a student of politics and he looks at the history and sees how Ronald Reagan, his hero, parlayed a losing campaign in 1976 into you know, becoming the leader of the conservative movement at that time, and then took it on to the presidency in 1980. And I mean, clearly, I mean, there's no doubt this is the template that Santorum sees for himself. And there are some similarities. I mean, there are differences too. I mean, Reagan was not nearly as gaffe prone, I would say, as Santorum is, and you know, I mean, just some of the some of the wacky things that Santorum has said in this campaign about the, you know, accusing Obama of snobbery for wanting people to go to college, or, you know, things he said about maybe the Crusades weren't such a bad thing. I mean, just some of the wacky things he says are not particularly Reagan-esque. So it'll be interesting to see, I'm not a big fan, I'm greatly understating it, but I'm not a fan at all of Santorum's ideology or his ideas. But I mean, is a political figure to watch. He's always held some fascination, and I think he's going to continue to do so for better or worse for the next 4 years.
Well, Will Bunch, you mentioned Reagan's, because Reagan made one of the greatest political speeches ever in his concession to Gerald Ford. When I think everybody in that hall, every Republican said, "Oh God, we've got the wrong guy," you know. There is that sort of ritual.
I think Santorum is really hoping to go for that in Tampa this summer. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the two-party conventions are shaping up as even duller affairs than usual, if that's possible. And you know, Santorum's speech that you might expect him to probably give in Tampa, it might be the one moment of liveliness that might be worth watching.
Well, the speech he gave today, though, was I thought in a way was pretty much his veiled way of saying, you know, who he really represents, which is, for a Republican, he really went out of his way to talk about his modest upbringing and his working class roots, etc.
I think if you saw the speech he gave after the Iowa caucuses, I thought he gave a very politically effective speech that night on the same topic. And, you know, absolutely. I mean, we've seen this evolution over the course of our lifetime in this country from a time when the working class was still, in the orbit of the New Deal, and you still, you know, saw the last stages of the FDR coalition holding together, you know, when working class people, viewed, you know, unions and progressive ideas as kind of their way to a better future. And, for better or worse, I think Santorum has his pulse on a large element of that now disgruntled working class, in the American heartland, who have been won over the last 50 years by conservatism. And I think Mitt Romney is a classic example of a Republican who connects very poorly with that key element of the party. And, I think Santorum realizes, perhaps correctly, that if he can become the voice of these people from places like Wisconsin and Minnesota and Colorado, who, maybe displaced former factory workers who are very disgruntled, but who blame liberalism for a lot of their woes, people who listen to talk radio and watch the Fox News channel. I mean, those are the people that I think, along with obviously his base of evangelicals, that Santorum sees as the wave he hopes to ride possibly to the White House in 2016 or 2020. I mean, he's only 53 years old, so, 20 years younger than John McCain was last time around. So he's got plenty of time to create Santorum 3.0, for better or worse. And I would, having watched his career, I would fully expect that to happen.
Well, I was going to say that Will Bunch, that he's in exalting and explaining his working class roots and talking about the ordinary people that touched his heart and whose hearts he's touched during this campaign. It was clearly a way to contrast himself with the 1% candidate that the Republicans are running.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I want to be clear about one thing, which is, I mean, if you actually look at the way Santorum governed when he was in the U.S. Senate, I mean, he, you know, as much as any other Republican, basically fought for the 1%, you know, I mean...
He's been living off the 1%, hadn't he? Hadn't he been a lobbyist?
He's become one of the 1% just in the 6 years since he left office. He makes, $900,000 to $1 million a year as a lobbyist and a TV pundit, but mainly as being a lobbyist, working for coal companies and drug companies whose issues he championed when he was a senator. So
that's why he moved to Virginia, to be in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's become the base of his operations, and he's very successful. You know, he's become a very successful businessman, and like I said earlier in the interview, I think he's going to be even in a more successful orbit financially in the next 4 years. And who knows? I mean, he may find like Mike Huckabee or Sarah Palin. He may find that, you know, being on TV and doing these other activities is so lucrative. He may just change his mind and decide not to run for president in 2016 because he may be making too much money. I mean, it's a sad commentary on today's politics, but you see that more and more often.
Well, but he's a bit of a stiff, isn't he? I mean, he's such a tightly wound guy. I don't see him as any kind of TV personality. But I guess he was on Fox.
He's very different from Huckabee. You're absolutely right in that regard. Although, odd as it sounds, I thought he was actually more relaxed and less overbearing in this campaign than he was when he represented Pennsylvania. So,
Well, he's certainly among the few of them that can actually give a speech and doesn't need a teleprompter.
Absolutely. When you think back on some of the things that a Rick Perry or some of the things that a Herman Cain said during the campaign, Santorum's obviously said a number of bizarre things, but being knowledgeable and understanding the issues is not one of his problems. So.
Right.
Yeah,
being a mental patient in a sweater suit may be one of his problems.
Admiring the Crusades was a problem.
Right,
so,
right.
And
homeschooling and being against college education and essentially wanting to take us back to the days of the Puritans, you know.
Yeah, well, and the focus on contraception. I mean, this is something that most of us thought was just. Whoever thought that this would be an issue again in a presidential election?
Well, I guess birth control.
I mean, sure, I totally understand why abortion is an issue, but I mean, birth control. I mean, these are things that we just thought were settled matters back in the era of Mad Men, you know, and
sure.
We are in 2012 debating about birth control again.
Well, thanks to Rick Santorum. I mean, but just in closing, Will Bunch. Clearly, even though he had a perfunctory conversation with Mitt Romney, Romney's got to make some kind of deal with this guy because he does have a lot of delegates. But the real issue is that since he is the candidate, Santorum, of the South, of the religious right, and he met today with James Dobson, if the religious right stay home, in this election, then Romney's toast. So Romney has to find a way to work with Santorum to bring the religious right back into the fold and to fire them up sufficiently to come out and vote.
Right. I mean, he needs. He's kind of in the same position that John McCain was in 4 years ago, in that McCain felt this need to add Sarah Palin to his ticket. And I'm not saying that Romney would add Santorum to his ticket. I would think that would be highly unlikely. But Romney has the same problem in that he needs to excite that base of the party, the Tea Party, you know, and the evangelical and Southern voters, because there's a lot of states where if those folks don't turn out, they would go from narrow victories for the GOP to narrow defeats. I think Romney has a pretty uphill climb right at the moment. Already, and
nevertheless, the Republican establishment is breathing a huge sigh of relief. I think they thought they were going to have a Goldwater blowout.
If this had dragged on, absolutely. Every week this went on, it just got worse and worse. But I think already, I mean, my take on it is that Romney is already in such a deep hole at this point. Honestly, I'm not sure how much more damage could have been done because most of it's been done already.
Well, Will Bunch, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks again, Ian. I appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and a senior fellow with Media Matters for America. He blogs at attitude.com. That's attitywtwod.com. And he's the author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy. His latest book is The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with one of the organizers of the 99% Spring.